those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring in somebody from our community to talk about their journey. And today I've got Andrew French Northern from the NECOM Conservatorium. Good morning, Andrew.
Morning, Herb.
Well, thanks for coming in on a lovely summer day here in Armidale. You are the CEO for NECOM.
Yes, the Chief Executive Officer for New England Conservatorium of Music.
And you took that over in October 2025, so you haven't been here very long?
I feel like I'm still on my pee plates, perhaps.
Now, what does a CEO, from your experience, and we'll get into what your experiences are, but what does a CEO do for a conservatorium of music?
CEO of a conservatorium has an interesting brief. I mean, it's the overarching executive officer for an organisation, which sounds straightforward, but that means I have managerial responsibility for everything in the conservatorium, which may be business-related, education-related. So it's a pretty wide brief. Luckily, most conservatoriums, and this one particularly, has a great array of staff to help the CEO execute their duties, which is extremely useful. You know, it's the staff is the background of any organisation. Regional conservatoriums, they're absolutely essential.
And you took over from Corinne.
Corinne, yes, the marvellous Corinne.
And she was there for many years.
Many, many years, yes.
I can't remember how many, but it's been as long as I remember.
It's been a long time, and she's been involved, I think, since the very beginning. I must be specialising in the 25, because when I went to Sydney Youth Orchestra, it was the 25th anniversary to be planned. When I got to the Upper Hunter Conservatorium, it was the 25th anniversary to plan. What's coming up for NECOM in 27? Yeah, so I seem to be specialising in silver. One day I'll get gold.
We can all hope. So let's go back a step.
Yep.
You were born in North Sydney?
Indeed, in the Mater Hospital. A long story, but yeah, that was a very interesting time in my life. But I'm basically a Northern Beaches raised child, so plenty of sun and surf. Mm.
Where'd you go to school?
Manly Boys High School, which curiously never was in the suburb of Manly and still isn't in the suburb of Manly.
And that was primary, secondary?
Primary, I went to Narrowena Public, which is still, I went back there a little while ago, and it was most funny walking your primary high school as a older person. Manly was my secondary school, yeah.
And you didn't do music until secondary school?
Well, I think unlike now, you know, the chances of doing music in primary school were so hit and miss. There was no sort of organised structure of music, and we've got lots to do in that space now, and primary music education is a big focus of what we do at NECOM for perhaps the same reason that I didn't get it when I was young. So I had to wait to high school to get really involved in music, which was very fortunate. Went through a school where there was an extraordinary bunch of students and staff who really fostered music.
And what music did you take up?
Originally, I was a horn player. I think I played trumpet in the school band for about a month, and then I was just thrown a horn. And so that was really the beginning of the journey towards professional, yeah.
So in your profession, after you left school, you're a guitar player as well?
Yeah, yeah. So I did quite a bit of pit work on the horn, musicals and shows like that. But I ended up getting a lot more work as a guitarist. I was very fortunate because I'd started on horn. I was able to read music very fluently, unlike many guitarists of my generation, even guitarists now. So that allowed me to get into jobs that other guitarists couldn't do because I could read really well.
So you talk about session playing.
A little bit of session work, a lot of touring and a lot of, you know, backing up artists who might be coming from overseas who picked up a local band who could read charts. Yeah.
Do we know any? Can you name any that we might know?
I wish I'd kept a diary of all of that. It's really quite interesting when I think about all the gigs I've done. I tell my students now that, you know, the best thing you can do, and nowadays so easy with digital things, keeping a record of everything you did. Like, I ran paper diaries like we all did, but they were all lost. And I wish I could go back to 75 or 74 and tell me, write everything down and keep it.
Note to self in the next life.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I was lucky enough to do lots of work with Tommy Tico and people like that. So I was very lucky to work with some of the leading musical directors in Australia, which is pretty lucky. But again, you make your own luck. You know, if I couldn't read music really well as a guitarist, perhaps I wouldn't have got those gigs.
No, for sure. Now, you were ahead of Hunter Conservatorium for
five years. Yeah, indeed, for 5 years. Yeah.
That was before this position?
Yeah, directly before this. I left Hunter to come here, yeah.
And you were for some time at TAFE in Orange.
20 years almost. Music in TAFE across the state was really strong, and we had a fantastic centre in Orange, a good digital recording studio based on Pro Tools, and we had any number of extraordinary musicians go through. Mate, it's hard to sort of point out one, but one's an example, Herb, would be Trav New, who's now a very well-regarded musical director for all sorts of people, including, you know, all the country artists use him.
So, yes, we bemoan what TAFE used to serve as our communities. I mean, it was gutted there. I can't remember the dates, but it was a very thriving educational sort of service to our communities. And then a lot of the funding was pulled out, a lot of the change in direction, and I don't think it's recovered.
No, that's correct. There's only a couple of music courses left. The bigger places sort of survived, but the smaller ones didn't. It was the federal government's move to contestable funding for vocational education training, and the TAFEs found themselves all of a sudden competing with the very low-cost providers who didn't have to supply things like all the extra educational support for people with disability needs or accessibility needs. You know, so we were sort of kneecapped on the funding front. Great programs in TAFE, the music programs. There was one here in Armidale, which was very good too.
Yes, hopefully we might be able to get some funding back into our TAFEs to actually help communities thrive in our regional areas.
I could give you a long list of musicians who just came out of the Orange TAFE program, and non-musicians as well, have perhaps gone into technical training, or one who works in the Sydney Opera House as a lighting director. You know, like, TAFE was that chance for them to get a start without having to go to the difficulty of moving to the big cities. For many, you know, that move to the big city and trying to get into the big established training organisations is quite challenging. And TAFE gave you that opportunity to do it in your hometown, which was, you know, really important.
No, I definitely think so. So let's just go back to the Hunter. So you're five years in the Hunter Conservatorium. What might you point to some of the highlights of that period?
Well, apart from doing the 25th, which was a fun thing to plan, we went through a large process. I think like lots of people after COVID, it was, you know, going to the room of mirrors and thinking about who you are and what you are and what you're going to do. And so after a long process, we came up to the idea that it really needed to change its name and focus. So it had been originally for the 25 years, the Upper Hunter Conservatory Music, but over a long time and lots of discussion, the consensus was we should move to Hunter Regional Conservatorium and represent more of the Hunter Valley rather than just the couple of towns in the Upper Hunter. But plenty of people in Singleton don't think themselves in the Upper Hunter, for example. To provide a service for the whole community, we thought that we needed to move the name to more regional-based. A bit like the NECOM here, you know, it represents a larger region than just one of the big towns.
So did you have concerts, regular concerts through the conservatorium?
Yeah, in Musselbrook, we had a visiting program of artists, just like here, on a slightly smaller scale, because Musselbrook, the conservatorium overall, is a much smaller community than here, and doesn't have the extraordinary music engagement that Armidale and region does. So yeah, we had a visiting program and lots of performances by the resident artists and all that sort of stuff. It was a fantastic conservatorium.
I think, though, in Armidale, we really failed to have a large venue, like a 400-seat venue that can actually draw in those large performances, like your, you know, Sydney orchestras and Brisbane orchestras, and
yeah, that'd be an observation. So, and that is supposed to be finished by 2022 when I first arrived at Musselbrook in 2020, but it's now past design. It's gone for state approval. They're putting in a regional entertainment centre in Musselbrook, which is 400-seater. Yeah,
yeah. I think that's what I'm saying is that Musselbrook's getting one.
Yeah.
We had it on the books at some time in the past, in previous councils.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it didn't come to fruition.
Well, they're a large commitment. Really, the most recent builds have been nothing under 35.
Mm-hmm. So 35 it's a big million.
Commitment. Yeah, it's a big commitment.
But you actually reap what you sow.
Oh, absolutely. And some of these things, how do you go out there with a tape measure and measure the success of it? You know, because it's not like you can measure an economic success or get a tape measure out and rule its length. It's about building a community and building a region which is attractive and very dynamic to live in. So you need a variety of institutions, including sports fields and performing centres and public spaces. It's a real mix. And I think, you know, regional councils particularly are under all sorts of financial difficulty to deliver all the things the community would like. The son-in-law works in Parramatta, and they've gone through an extraordinary amount of change to get Parramatta into the state it is now, literally the second CBD. But that's a generational change that took place. So it's a long time, and I think it takes a long time of planning.
But I think we don't mind if there's a path to take. Let's say we're a large performance centre in Armidale. If it was going to take 10 years to get it up and running from start to finish, I think people accept that it is a long path to chart, and the funding's big, but I think the benefit comes back to the community tenfold.
Oh, absolutely. Orange is a good example of that. Orange has a rather unique situation where they've got a very big central square, and they put a theatre in which was connected directly to the council chambers, and that's been there since the 70s. I was there for the opening weekend all those years ago. Then they put a very big art gallery in which has just been doubled in size, next to the library, and then a couple of years ago, a museum which has won several awards for design. If you get a chance to visit, do visit. The other side of that gives you a small amphitheatre outside, which gives you a lot. And around the corner is where the new conservatorium is just about to be finished. So it's a long-term plan. I think Orange probably had a 30, 40-year plan to get all those things in place. So now they've got a civic square, which is like a force multiplier, because all those community venues are all in one spot, you know, which is a really clever thing to do.
Yes, I think we'll continue to fly with a broken wing with only these small sort of entertainment areas. I think the Playhouse is about 90. I know.
Great room.
Oh, it's a great room. It's a fantastic job that they've done, and credit to all the volunteers that have been there. But it's still a small, but it's a small boutique little entertainment sort of area.
Yeah. So, for example, our bigger events, there's really only the Town Hall or Lazenby, both of which are compromised for different reasons. And they're usable and they're here and we'll use them. A dedicated space would be fantastic and I think would really develop the community base to a large degree.
It would build the fabric, or continue to build our fabric, like our sports do and our other things in our community, would continue to build the fabric of our society.
Yeah, which is really important. And increasingly, that's what councils are being given, perhaps forced even, the responsibility to do, as more and more of the sort of responsibilities used to be at the state level are being sort of flown down further and further into, you know, local governments. It was just interesting to see the news the other day that this hate speech that's proposed in New South Wales level is forcing the councils to enforce it if it goes through, which seems an odd one for a council to have responsibility for. But that's an example of what's happening at the moment. There's been a sort of realignment of responsibility at the three tiers of Australian government.
Yeah, but I definitely think music has the ability to build a community.
Oh, absolutely.
Bringing community together. I did talk to you off air about the Black Gully Festival that we had in November.
Mm.
That is about bringing community together. It's the music. The whole idea from David Carr, one of the principal organisers, was that music would bring people together so that we could then build community, show them environment, what was happening for the environment, art. A lot of the stuff from NRAM is fundamentally linked into the Black Gully Festival. And we did have the Jazz Lab from NECOM this year.
Yeah, one of our ensembles, fantastic group. Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
Look, it's most important to develop all parts of a community, but music has a unique response in the community and a unique position to bring people together. It transcends language. You know, that beautiful phrase that someone described, music expresses what you can't say.
And particularly also in our society, people have trouble coping with society. I think music is that soothing agent where people can turn to for support.
At all levels and in all environments. You know, we have quite a large music therapy program with one of our teachers, Fumi, delivering that. And that's just an example of the power of music. To see in aged care, you know, clients who are almost non-communicative, but after 30 minutes of music, become engaged and enlightened, come out of their shell. You know, music has that power. And I think all the arts do, but music uniquely seems to connect with parts of the brain. And we know some of this because of research over the last few years. You know, it's only music thinking about it or making it that lights up so many different areas of the brain. So there's something really particularly powerful about music and how it affects human beings.
No, definitely. I think if I listen to music or I play music or I sing some songs or something, I always feel a little bit euphoric, particularly if I do it with other people. But you mentioned aged care.
Mm.
So I'm finding I go to a couple of the aged care facilities once a month, and I'm finding that some of the old music is connecting with people's long-term memory. So they might have Alzheimer's or on-stage Alzheimer's, but connecting them with some long-term memory of a song or poetry is a big thing. Benjo Patterson, you know, Man from Snowy River, or The Man from Ironbark's a big one, particularly down at Walker Aged Care. People connect with that long-term memory. So I think it's very important.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence for that. Probably the primary person who produced that early on was Oliver Sacks in a book called Musicophilia, which has a number of diverse chapters. But one of the interesting was his work with aphasics in aged care, or aphasics with acquired brain injury. And it seems that now we have some of the physical evidence with MRI and things like that. We can actually see what's actually physically happening in the brain. But Oliver was interested to see the connection between memory loss and music retention. So now we know that music and the memories of music, and sometimes the lyrics connected with music, aren't stored where normally they should be. So lyrics should normally be stored in one part of the brain that just does language. But it appears to be stored other places when it's connected to music.
It's the root.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's
the roots. No, definitely. Yeah. And I think it certainly serves a very strong need and purpose in our society. But this sort of brings us to, you've only been here for 3 months or so.
Mm.
What have you got planned for 2026 in NECOM? And I don't want to put you on the spot because you've only been here for a little bit, but do you have some plans for 2026?
Well, 2026 is a big year because it's one of those years where we have the big set piece, which is New England Sings, which is an extraordinary demonstration of the very things we've been talking about, the power of music, particularly singing. And to see all those students coming into Lazenby Hall and doing those performances for New England Sings is really an extraordinary event. So that's one of the highlights of the calendar. Opera Australia is coming this year through us. So as SSO, a number of touring acts are coming. It's extraordinary.
Where will they be performing?
Opera Australia is going to be Lazenby. They bring a set in, which is extraordinary. They build a set on the flat in Lazenby, which is, I guess they get very used to doing it because Lazenby is probably one of their better venues, I suspect, when they're on the road. They're doing John Giovanni, which is, you know, all-time Mozart classic. Yeah, so that's an example of perhaps getting back to a previous discussion about a set-piece venue. That would be extraordinary just to have that in town. They do a great job. They bring everything in and take everything out. It's, you know, life on the road as a touring ensemble.
No, fantastic. So the other thing I wanted to talk about is other conservatoriums, but also NECOM does with the school outreach. Tell me about the school outreach in NECOM.
Yeah, outreach for the conservatoriums. There's 17 regional conservatoriums, of which NECOM is one of the bigger ones, and all of them do very large programs in schools. Primarily that's, I suppose, one of our great things is that we have this thing called the Regional Conservatorium Grant Program, which is a Department of Education program to enhance music in the regions, and that's how the conservatoriums deliver. So that grant allows us to do all sorts of extraordinary work in schools. So we could be ensemble performances and tuition in schools, small group instruction, sometimes one-on-one across the entire network. All the small centres tend to have some tuition with us.
No, I think connecting with those smaller schools is a big thing, like Black Mountain and Rocky River and those types of things. And what actually happens in those smaller schools?
Well, some of them are actually doing curriculum teaching. So they might be teaching towards a particular outcome at whatever stage one, two and three in the primaries, against NESA syllabus. Some of them are actually bands. So they could be doing a band of all sorts of mixed ensembles that the school wants to do. Most do some sort of singing, and all of that will tap into New England Sings. All those schools will be coming in with their preparation with all the tutors to come in and perform in New England Sings. So I think those small schools, just because they're small and isolated, they shouldn't miss out.
No, I think we've been talking about the Black Gully Festival there before, and I think there's a real opportunity for some of those smaller schools to come in to the Black Gully Festival in 2026.
I think you would find them very enthusiastic. Yeah, yeah.
Any other final points for NECOM in 2026 you'd like to raise?
I think there's going to be some new programs. I've had a long history in Motown music and jazz and all that sort of stuff, so I'd like to bring that to our community. I don't think we have a Motown band in town. Would you like to sing some backups, Herb? Can you see yourself as a Marvin Gaye?
I don't know about that. I'm a bluegrass singer, so I don't know.
It's all voice.
No, I suppose so. But I did propose that council might like to do a bit of a jazz fest down in the East Mall.
Oh, okay.
On the back end of their Creative Streets Festival.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have a jazz festival, a bit of Bourbon Street sort of vibe with a jazz band on every corner.
Well, that'd need a banjo.
Yeah, I suppose. Yes. But I think
do you know a banjo player?
Yeah, I do actually. There's actually a few. There was ones better than me, but I think something like that would actually go quite well.
Yeah, I agree. Jazz is an interesting form because in many ways it did four large periods, a bit like the sort of four periods of Western art music, but in about 100 years. So it's an interesting art form to be involved in because there's so many diverse ways that people would still be classified as jazz. Well, it could be almost anything, you know, like I grew up with people like Sandy Evans and people like that, which are now fusing Indian music with jazz. And so it's a really wide open field, improvised music.
Well, we do have a jazz hour 3 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, here in Armidale at 2ARM Community Radio. But we also have 2 hours on a Sunday of jazz because we know that jazz is loved in our community and it's just a little bit in the background at the moment, but it would be lovely to bring jazz back to the fore because we have orchestra players, we have classical players who, when they're not playing or listening to classical, they're listening to jazz or playing jazz.
Yeah. I do a wide variety of jazz. I do quite a lot in the sort of Django, gypsy, swing domain. I'm certainly known for my improvisatory modern jazz as well, and quite a few people would know me from that area. And I play a long time in a lot of very mainstream swing bands, you know, which are a lot of fun to play in.
Well, I'll be very interested to hear you play, Andrew.
Yeah, not today.
Not today, no, we haven't got anything for you to play today. Well, I thank you, Andrew, and welcome to Armidale.
Thank you very much.
I hope the move into your new house goes well.
I'm finalising details today. Isn't that fun, purchasing houses?
Yeah, I think I've purchased my last one, I think. I'm pretty sedentary where I am. But, no, thank you for coming to NECOM in 2025, a couple of months ago, and I wish you all the best with your future here in Armidale.
Well, thanks for that, and have a musical day.
And that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.